Ever since Disney has bought Star Wars and Marvel, there have been questions from the fan community. What exactly is an Inhuman? How is it different than a mutant? What's the expanded universe? What language do Wookiees speak? Are Storm and Black Panther still married? The answer to all these questions and much more on WDWNT On the Air's new show, Nerd Alert, with your host, Joe Hogarty.
Hey guys, and welcome to the very first episode of WDWNT Nerd Alert. I'm your host, Joe Hogarty, and joining me are Patrick Hackett and Ron Deanna. With this being the first episode, I wanted to tell you what the show is all about. The main focus of Nerd Alert will be two franchises that Disney owns, Marvel and Star Wars. We'll also discuss the important news of the week, and that may also include non-Disney-owned franchises. The main part of this program will be the topic of the week. We'll also have a section where we'll read and answer listener emails. So with that being said, let's get the show started, and here is the news of the week. Okay, so let's get right to the news of the week. Our first news story is they just released a new Avengers Age of Ultron TV spot. And this spot had a lot of new footage in it. So what was your opinion of the TV spot?
I'll jump right in there. That was the most fun spot for a comic book movie maybe ever. I know we're going to get into things like this a little bit later on, but that made me not be able to wait for May 1st. It was incredible.
Yeah, I don't think we have any great new footage. I think there was just enough little teasers in there beyond what we've seen in the last couple trailers to add to it. I think anything we see more is just going to start spoiling parts of the story. So I'm happy where we're at. I think we've got the perfect amount of marketing at this point. I think everybody's just hyped beyond belief for it. So I think it's time to just sit on what they have and rake in a ridiculous amount of money.
Yeah, you're right about that, Ron. I mean, I don't want to see any more Iron Man battling the Hulk. I just want to see it in the movies now, because if I see any more, I'm just going to get too spoiled.
I like the kind of team-up moves we're seeing. It almost looks like something out of a video game.
Yeah, what was the name of that video game?
Are you talking about the one that was like a gauntlet almost kind of thing?
Yeah, that one.
Oh, there was a bunch of them. There was X-Men Legends, Ultimate Alliance.
That's it. Yeah, because like in Avengers, the first movie, Iron Man did this move with Captain America where he blasted a beam onto a shield, and that was straight out of that video game. And in this TV spot, you see Thor basically batting Captain America's shield at Ultron's army, and that's pretty damn cool.
Yeah, fastball special time.
That's the first thing I thought of.
All right, so we'll go on to the next one, and the next story is the Russo brothers confirmed to direct Avengers Infinity War 1 and 2. Apparently now Hollywood Reporter is confirming this.
I mean, they did a great job. Winter Soldier, you know, one of my favorite films of last year. Just excellent through and through. I think the bigger question is, why not Whedon, and why not splitting it if, you know, one's supposed to be kind of Guardians-focused, one's supposed to be Avengers-focused. Where's James Gunn in that? Because there was rumors that he had, you know, after the success of Guardians, he had his pick if he wanted it to get it.
Yeah, it's a testy situation. I appreciate and I like the Russo brothers a whole lot, and when we get to these lists that I'm teasing later on, you're going to see just how much. But I worry about Wheaton. Wheaton has done a great job, and I really don't want this Avengers to be his last. But maybe he feels like he's told all the story he could.
Yeah, I feel the Russo brothers, they hit the jackpot. I mean, because before this, they were doing Arrested Development and Community. That's all I knew them from. And then they did Winter Soldier. Now they're doing the sequel, Civil War. They got a 3-year first look deal with Sony. And it sounds like they might be, or Sony might be interested in them with having to do with Spider-Man. And now they're doing Infinity War 1 and 2. I mean, in a way, I like Winter Soldier a lot. I mean, it's definitely in my list. But I'm kind of concerned, too, that they're putting so much faith into them. And what happens if they don't deliver?
Well, I mean,
they're going to have time to pull that plug if Cap 3 doesn't live up to standards, too. I mean, they're not going to have to go forward with that if they think they were a fluke.
That's a really good point. It's the same thing with any of them. Like, if Guardians bomb, James Gunn would be back to making, you know, Slither and things like that.
Oh, you were going to say pizza?
No, Slither. Good movie.
All right, I guess we'll go on to the next one. And the next news story is Star Wars Battlefront coming in December. And it's going to be next-gen only, which should affect Patrick. Is this not true?
It's so upsetting. I'm not a huge gamer, so buying a next-gen system isn't really on the top of my priority list, but when games like this get released, I feel so down about it.
I mean, we've been teased with, what, a half a minute of, you know, concept footage so far, and that drove everybody nuts. Like, I watched that entire, like, E3 streaming day, and it looked beautiful. But, you know, Star Wars games have looked great, and the majority of them have been far from great. Yeah. So I want to see a little bit more than we have before I say, oh, yeah, this is going to be fantastic. Because other than Knights of the Old Republic and some of the anything that's a flight sim, Star Wars doesn't have a great gaming record.
No, you're right on that one. I definitely agree with you with that.
No, they really haven't done well. Knights of the Old Republic and some of those games along those lines have their followings, and I guess they do pretty well. But, I mean, to really get the common man, Star Wars just hasn't done it.
I mean, the only thing I'm glad about is EA is doing this, and it's going to be DICE, and DICE does Battlefield. And I'm a huge fan of the Battlefield franchise, and I love those games. And if they could do it just like Battlefield, I'll be happy. The only thing I'm worried about is now, like, the flavor of the month is these microtransactions, and I'm worried that we're going to see a lot of that in this game.
I could totally see that coming.
Yeah, and that's kind of worrisome.
$20 a planet?
I mean, it could be like, so you're enjoying the game. Well, now how about play with Ahsoka? And how about play with Kanan? And things like that.
Well, I guess we're just going to have to see, but
I'll tell you what, one of the foremost people that I trust with video games, and also an ultra-talented actress and voice artist, Aisha Taylor, is super excited for the Star Wars game. So that got me kind of thinking about it.
Yeah, another thing I wanted to mention, too, I know, Ron, you said that we haven't seen much of it, but we're supposed to see a ton of it. Well, maybe not a ton, but much more than what we're seeing right now at Star Wars Celebration next month. They already announced that they're going to be showing a decent amount of footage there.
Yeah, I think they're going to need to show something because I think they're going to get the trailer. I think they're going to get that. I was wondering if we were going to get the rumored Disney Infinity 3 Star Wars edition at that point, too. I really hope they stay away from doing anything, announcing anything at the parks at Star Wars Celebration for kind of selfish reasons because I'm going to D23 and I want it to be there. I think it's a perfect place for the game stuff. You get a little bit of it before E3, and it's a great place to highlight something that needs to be highlighted that's probably going to get overshadowed by bigger franchises at the E3 stage.
And that is our last story that we have to cover. So with that, we're going to go right into the topic of the week. All right, so now we're going to get into the main section of our program, and that is the topic of the week. Since this is our first show, we thought it would be fun to have the first topic be a top 10 list. And this week's top 10 list will be our top 10 favorite superhero movies of all time. So let's start with Ron. And Ron, what is your number 10?
All right, well, I'm going to start with something that I think could have been higher on my list, but I think it's kind of borderline on the superhero movie for what we're talking about. And that's Big Hero 6.
Yeah! Fist bump!
Fist bump is not in my fighting database.
No, this isn't a fighting thing. It's what people do sometimes when they're excited or pumped up.
Ba-la-la-la-la.
It instantly came in as one of my favorite Disney animated films. I'm, you know, top 10, if not top 5 of those. I just loved every second of that movie. I thought it hit every button emotionally, story-wise. It was just a great film. I'm just not moving it a little higher because I think it's kind of marginal to what we're talking about as a superhero film here.
I'm going to take an old reference here from Judge Mills Lane. I'll allow it.
Yeah, no, I too enjoyed Big Hero 6 a lot, and I was kind of shocked when I heard that they were even considering it, because again, I mean, very few people even heard of Big Hero 6, but it paid off. They did the same thing with Guardians of the Galaxy, no one heard of them, and they made a really good movie out of that, and they did the same with Big Hero 6, and I can see that being in your top 10. All right, Patrick, so what's your number 10?
All right, Joe, I know it's the first episode of doing this, but I have to break the rules because I could not simply be limited to 10. My number 10 is a tie, and one is a Disney film. One is most distinctly not a Disney film. My number 10 is Sky High.
William Theodore Stronghold. Come here.
You're not mad?
My boy has super strength. How can I be mad? Ow! Sorry. Ow! You are strong!
One of my all-time favorite underrated Disney movies. It's kitschy, it's fun, and it just is a really enjoyable movie. And anytime it's on, I will watch it all the way through. And tied for that is, for number 10, is... I listen to the Flophouse podcast, and they talk about whether a movie is good, bad, 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 or a movie I kind of like. Well, this is a good, bad movie, Blade Trinity, featuring the acting prowess of Triple H and Ryan Reynolds.
You're public enemy number one.
Let's go, let's go, let's go!
We're going to have to take on the rest of the world, too. I see you alone, surrounded by enemies. We can't win this war alone.
Honestly, Ryan Reynolds in this role is basically Deadpool. You're getting a preview of what he will be in Deadpool in Blade Trinity. It's a stupid fun movie. You don't have to think. You go and you just enjoy the one-liners and you enjoy the action.
You know, I thought about putting one of the Blades into my list somewhere. It really came close because the Ryan Reynolds interrogation scene,
yes,
it was just so, so funny. And it's him and it is... very Deadpool-esque, and it
yep.
was great. I could see that being on the list real easy. I mean, the first one and the third one were really good films. The second one just,
atrocious.
I don't know what they were
I don't know.
Doing there.
So bad.
They're overlooked as, you know, oh, you know, Spider-Man or X-Men started, you know, this new superhero resurgence, but I think Blade came out before either of them, and it was not, you know, it wasn't a blockbuster by any stretch of the imagination, but it did well, and it was good.
I think Blade was the table setter.
It was, yeah. It definitely came out before all of them. It was the first Marvel movie to really make it big in the theaters. And getting back to Sky High, I totally forgot about that one. And it's definitely a great superhero movie.
And I'm going to tell you this flat out. The plot for both The Incredibles and the first Thor movie are ripped directly from Sky High.
Oh, I'm going to have to watch that again now.
You watch it with that thought in your mind.
I've seen it once. I thought it was a cute movie, but I don't think I, you know, ever like, eh, now I got to see this again.
I own it in two formats.
I'll probably watch it this week now that you mentioned it. Thank you. All right, I'll get to my number 10 now, and my number 10 is X2 X-Men United.
Since the discovery of their existence, mutants have been regarded with fear, suspicion, often hatred.
Drop the knives and put your hands in the air.
I can't.
Are they the next link in the evolutionary chain? Or simply a new species of humanity fighting for their share of the world?
When I first saw the first X-Men movie, I mean, I liked it. I didn't love it. It kind of felt like to me that it was like a made-for-TV movie. Just didn't have the budget in it. But with the second movie, they had more confidence in Bryan Singer and X-Men, and they definitely put in a lot of money. And I just love the overall story. I thought it was a huge jump from the first one. And it had some of my favorite X-Men in it. It had Wolverine, Cyclops, Jean Grey, Storm, and they introduced Nightcrawler. And I can't for the life of me understand why they just got rid of him. Because he was a fun character.
He was one of the best fleshed out characters in that movie.
Yeah, it was crazy.
And he is a fan favorite. He's definitely one of my favorites that they've done weird things with over the years. But he's always been... a very solid character for a lot of people. I just think it might have been Ratner. It might have been, you know, the actor and didn't want it, but I think he could have definitely continued on. And it also, one great thing about it, has one of my two favorite X-Men, and at least the cameo that they brought in later with Colossus, who I think they've highly underused in these movies.
Oh yeah, I totally agree with that.
Joe, did you say Cyclops is one of your favorite X-Men?
Well, it's one of my favorite X-Men team.
Oh, okay.
I don't have any action figures.
I mean, because I might have to storm off the set.
No.
Okay.
Well, I'm just glad. You know what it is? To me, X-Men's got to have Cyclops and Jean in it. Like, I loved X-Men First Class, but I would have liked it a whole lot more if Cyclops and Jean were in it instead of some of these other X-Men I never even knew existed.
Yeah, we won't get to we'll get to First Class on my list. We won't get to Future Past though, and this one will show up on my list a little bit later on too.
Okay,
X2 is, you know, it's on my list. It's actually my number 8. I thought it was the best of the X-Men films. Might not have had the most gripping story, but it had probably the best team, some of the best acting, good effects, and it had those core X-Men you really expect to be there.
Yeah, I agree with Ron, and actually it just makes it a little bit higher on my list. It's my number 6 for a lot of the same reasons, and also it is, until First Class, I think, it was the best X-Men film.
All right, and that's my number 10. So let's go back to Ron, and Ron, what's your number 9?
This one's going to be, I think, a little controversial for a lot of people because it's the only one from this franchise that's on my list, and that's The Amazing Spider-Man.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, Mr. Parker.
Not much to tell, really.
Peter lives with his aunt and uncle.
Did you catch that spider guy yet?
No, but we will. This guy wears a mask like an outlaw.
I think he's trying to do something maybe the police can't.
Can't?
You know, if you're gonna steal cars, don't dress like a car thief.
You a cop?
You seriously think I'm a cop? In a skin tie, red and blue suit.
Who are you?
I think it did the best job of putting that character on film we've had yet. Because to me, the most defining element of Spider-Man as a character as we watch him is the comedy and the, you know, just the wisecracks as he's sitting there fighting. And, you know, that wasn't there for Maguire. And an Amazing Spider-Man 2 had some good moments, but it just didn't, you know, grab my attention at all. I think the villains were weaker. It was just a good introduction of the character over again and just had the things that define the character for me.
Yeah, and I liked Amazing Spider-Man 2, meaning also. But I would say my issue with it was that it was just a little too dark, and I felt that they got Dark Knight's disease, like so many movies do, where they feel that if they're going to be successful, they have to give a dark pass to their main character. But I loved Andrew Garfield as Spider-Man. He did a great Peter Parker, too. And it was a step up from Spider-Man 3, at least.
Yeah, this one doesn't find a home on my list. I'm not a big fan. I think Andrew Garfield was a great Spider-Man. I just thought he really missed the mark with Peter Parker. But I can see how it can make a list, definitely.
All right, so what's your number 9, Patrick?
Apparently the number 9 slot is where we put ideas that we think people might think a little bit controversial. I know that this one gets a lot of heat, but I am a big fan of Thor.
You are a vain, greedy, cruel boy. You are an old man and a fool!
You're unworthy!
Father.
I now take from you your power! And I cast you out!
It's not the most critically acclaimed. Thor 2 doesn't make the list, but still I enjoy it. I've always been a big fan of Thor, and Loki has shown himself to be possibly the best character in the entire MCU right now, and I think he was at his best in Thor. I also enjoyed Natalie Portman and Kat Dennings' performance. I know that's going to sound a little bit weird because a lot of people knocked it, but I thought they were both perfect in their roles. I really enjoy Thor, and I think Hemsworth it's between Hemsworth and Downey Jr. who really was the first to lock down that I am this superhero. You can't look at him anymore without thinking of me.
I enjoyed the Thor movies. Neither of them made my list. Thor is a very hard character to write on his own. He's like Superman. He's just so powerful. And I wish they would stick more towards the Norse mythology side of things with him. And I think that's what we're going to get with Ragnarok. I mean, given the title's Ragnarok, that's, you know, what I'm expecting, at least. I did not like Kat Denning at all. You know, some...
You don't like Mjolnir? Like, that's his hammer. Mjolnir. Mjolnir.
Don't start. Don't start again. She's an actress I like in some things and really despise in other roles. Portman was fine. Skarsgård, yeah, it was great. Hemsworth, fantastic. All the Asgardians, great. I just think the story itself, they don't work too well for me in any of the Thor films. But I definitely see why they could be on the list if you like those stories. I just never thought Thor works well in the Midgard kind of realm.
Yeah, sorry, Millionaire Boy, but Thor wasn't on my list either.
Oh, man, I would be the best sidekick ever, Millionaire Boy.
Sidekick!
It'd be like Scrooge McDuck's sidekick.
Well, I will say, though, I did enjoy Thor a lot, and I think that one of the things that I thought was really great about it was, if you think about it, no one really knew who Thor was outside of maybe me and you two and a lot of comic book fans. They did such a great job at that movie. Now everyone knows who Thor is. You know, Kenneth Branagh did an excellent job at directing. The story was really good. Hemsworth was excellent as Thor. I mean, the last time I saw him, he was in Star Trek as Captain Kirk's father. And he was just this skinny, bony guy. Next thing you know, he's like, you know, he's like huge. And he pulled off Thor, and I didn't think he was going to be able to do it. And like you said, Loki's a great villain. And he kind of stole the show from that movie. And I agree, that was a great movie. All right, so now I'm going to go with my number 9. And my number 9 is less controversial than what you two had. It's actually Spider-Man 2.
So where you been, pal? You don't return my calls.
I've been kind of busy.
Taking pictures of your friend.
Spider-Man
killed my father.
No matter what I do.
Do you love me or not?
No matter how hard I try.
I want Spider-Man dead.
It's the ones I love who will always be the ones who pay.
I can't keep thinking about you. I'm getting married.
I want a life of my own. I'm Spider-Man. No more.
And this is when Tobey Maguire was Spider-Man, and this was the second outing of Spider-Man. And what I love about sequels, especially with superheroes, is that we don't have a real origin story anymore.
Amen.
Yes, we get to see Spider-Man in his suit. We get to see him swinging. We get to see him beating the crap out of crooks or whatever, or supervillains. He did a pretty good job with that. I thought that, I will admit, like we were talking about Andrew Garfield, I think he was a little better in the role of Spider-Man, but Tobey Maguire was pretty good in this. Also, Alfred Molina was an excellent Doc Ock, and I think that always helps. If you have a really good villain, that's going to help the movie a lot. And just the story just was really good, and there were a lot of scenes in that movie, especially the fight scenes, where it seemed like it was right out of a comic book. Like when they were fighting on top of that subway train, that to me was something that I would see right out of one of the Spider-Man comics. And of course, J.K. Simmons is in it as J. Jonah Jameson. And
the definitive J. Jonah Jameson.
I never liked Spider-Man 2. I just did not like... I think he acted fine. I just didn't like the direction they went with Doc Ock. I didn't think he was crazy enough for Doc Ock. Something just never sat right with me about that movie. I never understood why everybody loved it so much. I thought the first one was better. But I think, you know, we've discussed this, that Spider-Man villains, they just have this urge that everybody has to have sympathy for him, and it just didn't work for me.
Wow. What? Strong feelings there.
I'll just say, in regards to the first movie, the Green Goblin in the first movie sucked. And seeing Doc Ock as a new villain was definitely a breath of fresh air.
I actually have this one as my number 4, and you hit the nail on the head. I am a huge Alfred Molina fan. I think he does a great job in that movie, and as much as I really like Willem Dafoe, I had watched Boondock Saints so much at that point in time that I could not see him as anything else other than his character in that movie. I also felt like his performance, though a bit haunting, was way over the top. I thought Spider-Man 2, again, it doesn't have the whole pathos of the origin story, but also it's more Spider-Man. My one problem with Spider-Man 2, and it got knocked down, it used to be my favorite superhero movie of all time, and it's been passed by three recent films, but the subway scene, or the scene in the train that you were just talking about, where everybody is just like, we're going to ignore that we saw Spider-Man. It's okay. We'll pretend that we didn't see his face. I mean, smartphones weren't as saturated as they were now, but there were still camera phones then. I just didn't see that one playing out that way. But still, I feel that out of all the Spider-Man movies, Spider-Man 2 is the best.
I'll agree that subway scene was nauseating. Bottom line, though, I still liked it, and I think it was the best Spider-Man out of the five Spider-Man movies we've seen.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yes, it is. And that is my number 9. So now we're going to go into number 8, and Ron, what is your number 8?
X-Men 2, X-Men United, you know, all the reasons we were talking about earlier. It just had a great team, great characterizations, and a good story.
So you know what we'll do? We'll just go on to Patrick's number 8.
My number 8 is actually the original Spider-Man.
With great power comes great responsibility.
This is my gift.
Wow.
It is my curse.
Who are you?
Who am I? I'm Spider-Man.
I feel that this movie kicked off the superhero genre. I know we spoke a little bit about how Blade was a bit of the forerunner, but Spider-Man was that summer blockbuster. Spider-Man is the film that launched $1 billion, I think, and it's just been collecting more and more cash as we roll on. I thought Tobey Maguire was an amazing Peter Parker. The reason I can't put this higher is I don't think he was a great Spider-Man. I think we're really bogged down with some unnecessary twists and turns with Spider-Man's origin story. They took a little bit of liberty there, and then they erased it all in the terrible Spider-Man 3 that we can all pretend never happened. But Spider-Man deserves a spot on this list, and also there were some really great performances in it.
I like the original couple Spider-Men. They just never, you know, grabbed me the way they grabbed a lot of people.
Yeah, like I said, I liked Spider-Man, the first movie, and I agree with what you're saying, Patrick. I thought Tobey Maguire was a great Peter Parker, but he was kind of lacking in Spider-Man. I did like the origin story that they did with, they kept kind of faithful to the comic with the wrestler, and which I definitely enjoyed.
Bonesaw is ready!
Rest in peace, Randy Savage. And you know what I loved about this movie, too? It was the organic webs. And I know that James Cameron came up with that idea because he was originally going to direct a Spider-Man movie. And I love that. I mean, when I was a kid, I used to get nervous when he would run out of web cartridges. And knowing that it had organic webs, I thought that was pretty cool. All right, so my number 8 is Watchmen.
Hey, Rorschach. Hey, you're pretty famous, right? Hey, you know what? I'm pretty famous, too. Ain't that right?
That's right.
That's right. You know, maybe I can give you an autograph, huh? What you say, big boy?
None of you seem to understand. I'm not locked in here with you.
You're locked in here with me!
I was not a fan of Alan Moore's comic book. I just couldn't get into it, because part of the reason was I just didn't know the characters. I was used to Batman and Superman and who have you and all that. And now all of a sudden we have characters like the Owl and Rorschach, and I just couldn't get into it at the time I was reading it. And I hate to admit this, but there was too many words in that comic book. I needed
Dude,
more
Dude, at least
pictures.
You're honest, man.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I want pictures, not words. Anyway, I will say, though, the one thing that was good about the movie is that it was a great movie. Even though I'll admit it is very dark and it's hard to watch multiple times, when I do watch it, I just think it's a very well done movie. And this was Zack Snyder's first kind of shot into superheroes with this, and I thought he did an excellent job. And I guess Warner Brothers felt that way too, and they gave him Man of Steel, and now they're giving him everything else in the DC universe.
I thought it was as good of a version of the book as we could ever get, and I'm a huge fan of the book. I've read it probably a dozen times, if not more. I could have probably considered this a little bit more for my list. It just never lived up to the book to me, and that probably hurt it a little more in my head.
I'm with Ron. I love the book. It's one of the few comic books that I have read repeatedly. I thought the film was atrocious. Let me clarify that. I enjoy it, but I know it's a bad movie. I just think they missed the mark a couple times. But what's his name as Rorschach gives an unbelievable performance? Jackie Earle Haley? Is that his name?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, he gives an incredible performance. I could take or leave just about everybody else, but I could see how that makes your top 10 list.
So that was my number 8, Watchmen. All right, so now we're up to number 7, and Ron, what's your number 7?
I'm going back a little old school here, and Christopher Reeve's Superman 1.
Excuse me.
That's a bad outfit. Boom!
Okay, Breslau, move these people.
What the hell is that?
Easy, miss. I've got you.
You've got me? Who's got you?
I mean, if we're talking about defining the genre of superhero film, I don't think you can have it without this. I mean, it didn't have the most, you know, thrilling action or anything like that, but it brought a character people knew to the screen in a way no one had done before. I mean, it redefined special effects. Really, you could believe on-screen flight at that point, you know, at least at the time with it. And great acting. I mean, great Luther in Gene Hackman. It really, really just did everything Man of Steel lacked. If you could get the action of Man of Steel and the heart of Superman, that's the perfect Superman movie right there.
I am just not big on Supes. I'm a little younger than you guys, so I don't really remember that all that well. But Christopher Reeve did an amazing job as Superman. He was a great Superman.
All right, y'all is crazy. This is my number 1. I can't believe that you're ranked at number 7, and Patrick, you don't even have it on your list. To me, this is my favorite all-time superhero movie, and I think it's the perfect superhero movie. And like you said, Christopher Reeve was just an incredible Superman, and even more so, he was a great Clark Kent. And that's the one thing that I felt that Man of Steel lacked, is that Clark Kent didn't feel like Clark Kent to me. Clark Kent's always nerdy, and he has that persona so that he can kind of fool people into not knowing that he's Superman. He just did such a great job with that. But I just think they did an excellent job. I'd say my only negative that I have with it, Lex Luthor wasn't really portrayed that well by Gene Hackman. I know he had an issue of shaving his head at the time, so they just basically had him use his own hair and then put on like a bald cap at the end. But he was too comical and he was too likable. And to me, Luthor is always a nasty, evil person.
I love smarmy Luthor that has that public face to him. I mean, the Byrne era Luthor is what I grew up reading. And I think that came a lot from the Hackman portrayal. And I just really thought, you know, he knows he's the bad guy, but he doesn't want anybody else to know he's a bad guy.
Bottom line, though, is I love Superman the movie. I watch it every year, at least once a year. And the one other thing I wanted to mention was John Williams' score. Is, to me, that's the best score that has ever been written for a movie, even surpassing his Star Wars score.
I can't disagree with that. I mean, obviously it's opinion, but I mean, it's definitely up there. It's an incredible score. That music, you hear it, you think of Superman.
If you want to wake up feeling good in the morning, set that song as your alarm sound. You can't be mad to wake up in the morning. I used to do that all the time.
I don't know if I could do that every day. Yeah, like I said, I love his score, and I just, when I was a kid, I just loved sitting in the theater And I could just sit and just watch the opening credits, which was like about 10 minutes, I think. And if I had to leave right after that, I would have been happy. I love that movie. I love Christopher Reeve's portrayal as Superman. And he'll always be Superman to me. Just glad we can remember him that way. Anyway, that's my number one. Thanks for ruining that for me, Ron.
I told you our number ones were not going to be the same.
And I disagreed with you, but you proved me wrong. Anyway, so, Patrick, what's your number seven?
All right. I said I didn't like Superman, but I did find a place for him on this list. Superman 3. I really... I'm kidding.
I was just about to say, you're insane.
Iron Man 2 is actually the only time you'll see Iron Man on my list. I think, once again, I go with number 2's... Oh, that does not sound good.
Were you kidding with that one, too?
No. this is...
Wow.
Wait a minute. Which one's 2?
Mickey Rourke?
Yeah.
No, I am. I'm wrong with that one. I freaking 3. Three.
That's with the Mandarin?
Yes.
Or the... We think it's Mandarin?
Yes. Or do I want one? Holy God, all these movies have run into one for me. Man, I don't want Iron Man at all. See, this is what happens. Now I'm panicking.
You know what, Patrick? We'll give you the opportunity to combine them all into one movie.
No, I don't want to do that. Give me a second. Iron Man really made a mark on me.
What's going on here?
Let's face it. This is not the worst thing you've caught me doing.
There's been speculation that I'm parading around as a superhero. I'm just not the hero type, clearly.
Originally, I said 2, but after looking back at Whiplash, I'm like, oh, God, they really missed the mark there. And while I really enjoy 3, I think I enjoy 3 for the wrong reasons. This time, I'm going to go with an origin story, and I'm going to go with Iron Man 1 in this spot. The first Iron Man, I feel that setting up Tony Stark and the beginning of the Avengers initiative here really sets the pace for everything that comes after. And Downey Jr. is incredible, and I just think that it's good, not great, and Iron Man really deserves a spot on my list, and I enjoy it thoroughly.
Yeah, I can't argue with its inclusion. 1 and 3 were both really, really good. 2 built up and fell flat at times. I can't argue that he deserves to be on the list. I didn't find a place for him. I thought about it. He was definitely floating around in there. And I think part of that problem was I couldn't decide, you know, 1 or 3. 3 just had, I think, the better fight scenes, the better action. 1 might be, you know, one of the best viewing of an origin of a superhero on screen that I could think of. Yeah, I just didn't pick him. I didn't pull the trigger on that.
Yeah, you really confused me and you stressed me out by saying Superman 3. So, and now, what was it? Was it Iron Man 3? Is that what you're saying?
Iron Man the first is my number 7.
Okay. All right, anyway, Iron Man 1. Yeah, I guess that is the best of the 3 Iron Man movies. I don't have too much a problem with Iron Man 2, as most people do. I know that a lot of people consider it as the worst of the Marvel movies, but I think it's okay. And I enjoyed Iron Man 3 for what it was. I think it was more of a Tony Stark movie than an Iron Man movie. But yeah, I mean, Iron Man, I think that laid the foundation for a lot of Marvel movies, and it made Robert Downey Jr. the billionaire that he is right now. And he did. He portrayed a really good Tony Stark, and he did a good job in the Iron Man suit, which I'm not sure if he was in or not. But, yeah, no, it was a great movie. I love Jeff Bridges as the villain. Yeah, the last battle between him and Ironmonger, I thought it was fantastic. I mean, and that lives up there with, like, some of the best battles in comic book movies. So, yeah, I can definitely see where you're coming from when you pick Iron Man as your number 7. All right, so here's my number 7. My number 7 is Kick-Ass.
Kick-Ass has become the latest internet phenomenon.
This is awesome.
It's actually pretty good.
He should call himself Ass Kick instead.
He's inspired a wave of real-life superheroes.
Tool up, honey bunny.
Just
time to get bad guys.
You want to go fight some crime?
Let's see what you can do.
This is based on Mark Miller's comic book. Matthew Vaughn directed it, and since then, he has become one of my favorite directors. He did Stardust, he did X-Men First Class, he did The Kingsman, The Secret Service, and I don't know if either of you have seen Kingsman yet, but I just love that movie, and I'd say that's probably my favorite movie in the last 2 years. It's a great movie. This guy really knows how to do action, and I know that The Kingsman was another Mark Miller comic, too. I really enjoyed Kick-Ass. I didn't really know too much about it going into it, other than it was a comic book that Mark Miller did. But they did a great job, and you know, none of the characters were well-known. I think who really stole the show was Hit Girl, and she really stood out because she really was the one that kicked ass throughout that whole movie. And she was this 11-year-old girl that was a foul-mouthed assassin. Anyway, I really enjoyed Kick-Ass. I was disappointed in Kick-Ass 2. And it probably had to do with the fact that Matthew Vaughn didn't direct it. And that is my number 7, Kick-Ass.
I'm glad that's on somebody's list, because I thought it was a really good movie, and I got to agree with just about everything you said. You know, all of Vaughn's films have been great. Kingsman was really a good film. I think it suffered from being counter-programming for 50 Shades. I think if maybe it stuck with original release date, it would have done a little better.
It's still doing pretty good. I think it's in the top 5 still.
It did great internationally. Didn't do so well domestically, and I can see why. I mean, I can also see, I think, not going into that, because it is a comic book movie too, and if they had gone for the PG-13 rating, it would have done a lot better, and you wouldn't have lost too much in it. But it was a really, really good film. Kick-Ass was great. Oh, and I gotta say, Miller is, you know, one of my favorite writers from the time, and you know, the story behind Avengers was his Ultimates, was kind of the core of it.
Yeah.
I enjoy Kick-Ass. It's not on my list. But Nick Cage is fantastic in that.
Finally got a decent superhero role.
Anyway, that's my number 7, Kick-Ass. Okay, so now we're up to number 6, so... Ron, can you tell me what your number 6 is?
Sticking with semi-classics here, Batman 89.
Don't kill me! Don't kill me, man!
I'm not going to kill you. I want you to do me a favor. I want you to tell all your friends about me.
What are you?
I'm Batman.
Just such a great movie when it came out. Still holds up compared to the sequels. Keaton seemed like the weird choice at the time, but now you kind of think of him as the crazy version of Bruce Wayne. Ledger's Joker has become legend, but Nicholson's was the more classic and even, I think, more homicidal at times than Ledger's. And it just worked on every level at the time. You know, another genre-defining moment, and once again, redefined what a summer blockbuster was. One of the first movies to come quickly to VHS and dominate again. Redefined the toy market in every way since Star Wars. And it really is a great film. And another great score. You know, we think about the Williams score when we think Superman, but I really think we still think that Elfman score, and it continued on as kind of the theme through the animated series.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got nothing else to say. You covered it pretty well. Not on my list, but great choice.
Yeah, Ron, you are killing me. You stole another one of my, like, top movies here. That's my number 4. I love Tim Burton's Batman. And the reason why I have it all the way up at number 4 is because this was the start of the Dark Knight in the cinema, and we really needed it. Before that, we had Adam West's Batman, and to me, that just wasn't Batman. We also have to thank Frank Miller for doing the Dark Knight Returns series, because they would never have made Batman this dark if not for that series that he did. I felt in the beginning, like when they cast Michael Keaton, like so many people, I was like, what are they, crazy? Michael Keaton, Mr. Mom? But I just couldn't see him as Batman. But he proved me wrong. I mean, just like so many casting choices I was wrong about. I thought he was an excellent Batman, and to this day, I think he is the best Batman because he's intimidating. If I was in an alley with this guy, I would be crapping my pants, I'm telling you right now, as opposed to Christian Bale's or Val Kilmer or even Ben Affleck. Ugh. But yeah, I mean, I thought Michael Keaton did such an excellent job as Batman. And again, I thought he was threatening. I thought he was intimidating. He was scary. And that's what The Dark Knight is all about. I will say I didn't think he did a great job as Bruce Wayne. I felt that he was very reclusive and he should have been more of a playboy. But still, I think he's the best Batman. And I'm going to say exactly what you said, Ron, about Jack Nicholson as the Joker. He did an excellent job. He was perfectly cast. I know he was a big Joker fan, too. And he really wanted that role. And it shows that he knew the character very well. And again, what makes him different from Heath Ledger's performance is, I'd say this is more like the character that we're used to seeing in the comics, where Heath Ledger was basically this guy that was a psychotic killer who would put makeup on. Jack Nicholson's Joker actually followed the comics, and he fell into a vat of chemicals. His skin became bleached, his hair turned green, and then he got a little crazy, created this persona of the Joker, and he did an excellent job. And another thing that you mentioned too that I totally agree with is Danny Elfman's Batman theme. I'd say for me, the second most popular superhero theme after Superman. And it's really sad that we don't see that anymore, because usually when they do themes and music for, or scores for superhero movies, they don't really focus on a real theme that we can remember. All right, so Patrick, what's your number six?
We already got to my number six. It was X2. I thought that it was the best of that generation of X-Men movies. It's a very good film. It has the X-Men team you're looking for. Yeah, and I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, and again, I have nothing to say. That was my number 10. So here's my number 6. And just because you stole some of my favorite superhero movies, I'm going to steal one from both of you. My number 6 is Captain America Winter Soldier.
Oh, man.
We're going to neutralize a lot of threats before they even happen.
Thought the punishment usually came after the crime.
S.H.I.E.L.D. takes the world as it is, not as we'd like it to be.
This isn't freedom. This is fear.
You need to keep both eyes open.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
I thought it was great. I liked the story. I wasn't too keen on Chris Evans as Captain America when he was announced because of the Fantastic Four, where he was portraying Johnny Storm. But he did a great job in the first Avenger. And then he was even more like Cap in the Avengers. Winter Soldier, he made me believe he was Captain America. And now I have a hard time thinking of an actor who could replace him. The story was so well written, too, and was very much like a 60s spy movie. I'd say for me, and you guys may disagree with me on this, I thought the weakest part for me were the enemies. And Sebastian Stan was great as the Winter Soldier, but he really didn't have much to do in it. He barely had any lines in it, and I guess that's part of his character, is to be mysterious. But I would like to have seen him have a little more screen time. And Robert Redford was okay, but I would have loved it if it was revealed he was the Red Skull at the end, which I did hear rumors of. But overall, I loved it, and I've seen it many times, and it just keeps getting better and better.
Yeah, this is all the way up at my number 2. Actually,
me too.
It is the highest of the MCU films on my list. Actually, I think it's up there because while it's a superhero movie, it's a superhero in a spy movie. It's something you could take seriously if it was, you know, a James Bond type character doing the same role. It grabs you with the story. We don't have to have the background on who these characters are. I can see what you're saying about the villains, but I like that it was an organization that was the villain. Even with the cybernetics, Bucky wouldn't have really been a match for Cap, you know, mano a mano, if Cap wasn't holding back. And it just worked on a movie level, not just a superhero movie level. And that's what did it for me. And we're going back to score. I really love the score for this film, too. I think it had great music. It was a beautiful film. Shot well. Great sidekick characters. I thought the villains were fine. And it used the characters we know in a different way. And just did everything right.
Ron basically said almost verbatim what I wanted to say, and you touched on it too, Joe. It, to me, feels more than a superhero movie. It feels like a good film, and I think that's what's really important when you rank these. Sure, they can be good superhero movies, but for something to transcend the genre and become, you know, something you look at as a good film that you would put in there with other good movies people have seen through the year, that's what's big on Winter Soldier. I agree that the bad guys lack a little bit of punch, but I also agree with what Ron said. It's great that it's an organization, that it's not just one guy, and it's this collective, and I feel like it's set up so much more, including what happened on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and its place in the Marvel Universe is huge, and the movie's terrific.
Well, that's my number six, Captain America Winter Soldier, and you don't know how glad I am that I stole it from both of you, especially after Ron stole my number one and my number four. All right, so moving on, let's get to number five. And Ron, could you tell us what your number five is?
Yeah, we're getting really recent here, and it's Guardians of the Galaxy.
Hey, 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 that's mine.
You son of a...
Hey! Take those headphones off right now!
They call themselves the Guardians of the Galaxy.
There's just nothing wrong with this movie at all. It's just fun from the moment you sit down to the moment you leave. You just want more of it. You know, characters most people didn't know and now are absolutely in love with. I mean, voice acting, real acting, makeup, effects, story, everything about that movie just hit so perfectly. There's nothing I can say that was wrong with that movie at all.
Well, Ron, you are completely correct, and that's why this is my number one movie. Again, like I said about Winter Soldier, when something transcends the comic book genre and becomes something that I am willing to talk about as a good movie, as a good film, Guardians did this. It was incredible. It had everything you could want in a film. It had action. It had adventure. It had high emotional stakes on a number of levels. It had a twinge of a love story, but it wasn't too much in there where it becomes a distraction. Like, you feel that a lot of times love stories need to be shoehorned into this comic book movie so guys' girlfriends have something to do, or whatever misogynistic, chauvinistic idea you think that they need to have. But there was a little twinge there. It introduced these characters, and instantly they became beloved characters. These are the first two Marvel characters from this film to set foot in a Disney park. It's huge. It is one of my favorite movies of all time, period. Never mind just in the comic book genre. I love Guardians of the Galaxy. And if you haven't seen it, for some reason you're listening to this podcast and you haven't seen it, stop, pause it. Go watch it, come back, and tell me how right I am.
Wow, I actually thought I was going to steal this from both of you guys. This is my number five. So I agree totally with Ron on this one. When this movie was first announced, I had no faith in this movie. I barely heard of any of the characters. I just felt that Marvel was scraping the bottom of the barrel because they were running out of characters. They couldn't use Spider-Man or X-Men or Fantastic Four. And they're like, well, we got to start making more movies about superheroes. And someone said, well, there's these Guardians of the Galaxy. Maybe someone said, well, what's that about? There's this talking raccoon that carries a gun. And then there's this tree that says three words. And then someone said, all right, that sounds pretty good. Let's do it. And I figured this was going to bomb, and this was going to bomb hard. I was never so happy to know that I was totally wrong about this one, because I love this movie, and probably I should be ranking it a little higher. Another thing what I like about this is like one of the few stories, superhero stories, that
there's really no origin story for the characters. I mean, you have Peter Quill a little bit in the beginning, but you don't go through his whole life to see how he became Star-Lord. And the same thing goes with Gamora and Rocket and Groot and Drax. You hear a little bit about each one of the characters, but you don't spend like a good hour figuring out exactly how they became to be where they are right now. And it just worked. I mean, if anything, to me, it proved that you don't have to go through a long story. You can combine characters all together, and if they work well together, you're going to have a good movie. And you have a good writer, you have a good director. And on top of that, you got to mention the soundtrack's incredible. And one last thing I'm going to say, too, is I think that Warner Brothers and Sony looked at this movie and they said, we got to be doing something wrong here. I'm sure they had no faith in this movie either. And now all of a sudden, this movie became a huge success. And I know for a fact that the executives at Sony looked at this, because The Amazing Spider-Man 2 was released around the same time, and their movie didn't do anywhere near as good as what Guardians did. And they had an established character with four movies under his belt. And that just said something, that Marvel is doing something right that we just are not getting. And that's why I think that that was a huge reason why Sony finally decided to have Marvel help them reconstruct Spider-Man. Okay, so now let's go on to Patrick's number five. What's your number five, Patrick?
My number five is actually Captain America 1.
There are men laying down their lives. I got no right to do any less than them.
I can offer you a chance.
Our goal is to create a new breed of super soldiers.
When he brought a 90-pound asthmatic onto my army base, I let it slide.
I am looking for qualities beyond the physical.
You win wars with guts.
Grenade! Everybody down!
Is this a test?
He's still skinny.
I feel like it was a great introduction into the character. We got backstory, but with Cap, it's really tough because you could just have him overwhelmed with backstory. And I think they set it up perfectly with how they did it. The Howling Commandos were a great addition. Haley Atwell as Agent Carter was great. I just felt like a lot of people didn't give this movie enough credit, and Cap 1 is my number 5.
What I really love about Cap 1 is it felt like a period piece. It really felt like an over-the-top World War II movie we would have seen, you know, kind of coming in the around the time of The Great Escape. You know, it really just felt so in the moment and something that you would do as a propaganda piece post-war. And it worked on that level.
Yeah, I don't have Captain America, the First Avenger on my list, but I do enjoy it. And I thought that gave me a lot of hope for a lot of the Marvel movies that were coming out, because they did get Captain America right. And I thought that Chris Evans did a terrific performance as Steve Rogers in Captain America. And what I really enjoyed about it, too, is that they chose Joe Johnston to direct it, and he directed Rocketeer. And it had a very familiar vibe to it from that movie. And he does seem to get period piece as well, so I think he was well chosen. I really enjoyed Hugo Weaving as the Red Skull. I thought he was a good villain. I was kind of sad that we haven't seen him again, because Marvel really is lacking in villains. We've seen Loki, I think, 3 times already. I think we need some really good villains like the Red Skull. And it made Chris Evans a star, and it made him Captain America. All right, so my number 5 is no surprise here. It's Guardians of the Galaxy. I basically said everything I was going to say before. So with that, we're going to move on to our number 4. And Ron, what is your number 4?
Batman Begins.
Where were the other drugs going?
I never knew. I don't know. I swear to God.
Swear to me!
I know we've talked about how we don't like, you know, superhero origin movies. And that's all this was, but it did it well. It really took a good take on Batman Year One, brought it in, had one of my favorite Batman villains translate the film for the first time in a creative way with Ra's al Ghul.
I thought you were going to say Scarecrow.
No, I thought Scarecrow was fine, but Ra's is always been such a great uninvolved villain and someone who's always been Bruce's equal. It did it well. It set up a great universe there, and it felt the most realistic of any superhero film, even beating out its sequels in that, to me.
I agree with Ron in all those books. In all those movies, I actually feel like Batman Begins is the best. I really enjoyed these movies when they first came out, but to me, they just haven't stood up well to me. And I feel like as I get further away from them, even as I continue to watch them, I just don't have the same appreciation as I did when they first came out.
Yeah, I loved Batman Begins. I thought Christian Bale was a great Bruce Wayne. He was a decent Batman. I think he could have toned down on the deep voice a little bit. But I have to agree with what Ron said about, and I pronounce him as Ra's al Ghul. Liam Neeson did a great job as that character. I never thought I was going to see a Batman movie with Ra's al Ghul in it. And they did a fantastic job with that. Again, something else I'll mention too is the music. I really enjoyed Hans Zimmer's music that he composed for the film. And it gave me hope for superhero movies, because back then we still were uncertain as to what direction we were heading. I'm just glad that they were made, and you'll find out that one of those movies is up there in my top three. But as for now, I can totally see where you're coming with Batman Begins. Thought that was a great movie. All right, with that, Patrick, what's your number four?
My number four, we already discussed it, Spider-Man 2. Big fan of the movie for the longest time. It was my favorite go-to comic book movie.
Yeah, and you know how I feel about that one.
Yep.
And we heard from Ron on that, too. My number four is Tim Burton's Batman. And we discussed this already in depth, so I'm not going to go too much into it. But like I said, I really enjoyed the movie, and I'm glad it was made, and glad that Warner Brothers gave Tim Burton the chance to make the movie, and that Michael Keaton was Batman. And that's it.
I'm Batman.
I'm Batman. All right, now we're getting into the top three. Ron, what was your number three?
My number three was The Avengers. You know, I really have to say Uma Thurman and Ralph Fiennes did a great... Oh, wait, wrong movie.
well played.
No, in reality, it was The Avengers.
There was an idea to bring together a group of remarkable people. So when we needed them, they could fight the battles that we never could. Gentlemen, what are you prepared to do?
It, you know, proved that the team movie worked. You know, it balanced the characters. It did, you know, so much so well with everything. And, you know, great action, great comedy. Yeah, it's the, you know, one of the biggest, if not the biggest movie of all time still, right? So you can't say too much bad about it. It had some flaws. It definitely felt Joss Whedon, which sometimes doesn't always translate great to, you know, a big action scene, but it worked. And we're going to see characters that are never going to get their own movies in it, or their own movies again, at least, in it. It's The Avengers. It's what we're talking about now. So it is the defining movie of the MCU.
I considered putting Avengers, and at the last minute, I replaced it with Blade 3 and Sky High. It would have been my number 10. Avengers is awesome. I just enjoy the more focused films a little bit more.
Yeah, for me, The Avengers was number 2. And again, Ron, thank you for stealing another one of mine. But yeah, and I totally agree with you, Ron, with what you said. I thought The Avengers was a great movie. I felt they were building up this movie since Iron Man first came out. And Marvel had the idea of combining their major heroes to come together in one movie and form the superhero team, the Avengers. After Iron Man 2, they teased a bit in The Incredible Hulk, then Captain America, and then a little bit in 4. Small scenes were placed into the films that were leading up to The Avengers. I didn't think it could be done successfully. I think a lot of credit goes to Joss Whedon, because he gave all his characters adequate screen time, and he really got the characters. The only thing I wasn't crazy about was a musical score by Alan Silvestri, and that kind of shocked me because he did Back to the Future, he did The Abyss and Forrest Gump, and those are some of my favorite soundtracks. But yeah, that is my number two. And I can see you ranking it as high as you did. All right, Patrick, what's your number three?
My number three, I'm surprised no one has had this, and I think I'm the only one that's going to have it on my list, because I do believe we've revealed most of your guys. X-Men First Class.
You want society to accept you, but you can't even accept yourself.
Should we have to hide?
Tomorrow, mankind will know that mutants exist. They'll fear us, and that fear will turn to hatred.
Not if we stop a war. Not if we risk our lives doing so. We have it in us to be the better men.
We already are.
I thought that this was the best done X-Men movie. I know that the characters are not some of the more well-known X-Men, but I feel like they went above and beyond to introduce us to these characters, and I felt a lot more sympathy for the X-Men in this movie than in the other ones. I think it was just tremendously well acted. Jennifer Lawrence gives a standout performance as Mystique, and I think that was really the role that started rocketing her towards superstardom. Michael Fassbender and James McAvoy were amazing, and I never thought that Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart could be replaced as Magneto and Professor Xavier, but they did an incredible job. Fassbender in particular, really tapping into Magneto and the scenes of the concentration camp. Man, there was so much emotion in that. I absolutely love X-Men First Class. I will watch it time and time again. And I will say that one of the things that knocked it down a little bit on my list is the fact that the follow-up I thought was terrible.
You mean Days of Future Past?
Yep, I thought Days of Future Past was awful.
I'm not going to say awful. I think it had the same expectations I had when I finally read the comic after all these years, that it's built up so much that it can't live up to those expectations. I got to agree with First Class. It was number 11 on my list. It was a real fight to get it on there, and I was actually kind of going between that next two to put one of them on the list. And I think it's just who the X-Men were in it that kept it off the list for me. I mean, Banshee, was another character I really enjoyed. Beast, he and Colossus are my two favorite X-Men. I know that's kind of weird choices, but the kind of brainy and brawny guys together, I think they're good dichotomies, and it was great to see him in it, and it was a great original story. Yeah, I think just the rest of the team kept it from being on my list.
Yeah, that was close for me too, because I mean, I love X2, but First Class I really enjoy, and again, a lot has to do, like what I said with Kick-Ass, Matthew Vaughn directed that movie, and I think he's an awesome director, and I think he did an excellent job with portraying the X-Men. And like what Ron said, my problem was, is like, who the hell were these X-Men? If you're going to do a movie about X-Men, you're going to need Jean Grey, and I hate to say this, Patrick, you're going to need Cyclops too.
Stop it.
It's true. You don't need his brother. I guess no one really knows who Cyclops is either, but why would you have his brother instead of him? It just made no sense.
Because he's awful and I hate him.
Well, we'll get to that some time. And who is this Wasp wannabe? I mean, what was that character? I don't even remember what her name was. I don't remember any of the other X-Men characters' name other than Mystique and Professor X. And
Darwin.
Who?
There was Darwin. He could adapt to take any form he needed to. And Havoc. Havoc's awesome.
Blah. What about the villains, too? I mean, you know, that guy was apparently Nightcrawler's father.
Well, yeah, that Nightcrawler and Mystique. Yeah, you can tell right there. But obviously, that's how Nightcrawler's made right there. And I'm surprised they didn't bring that up.
But no, I did enjoy the movie. I'm going to say this really quick. I like the movie. It's just that I wish they would use different X-Men and different villains. Although Kevin Bacon was pretty good as...
I didn't even mention Kevin Bacon was great as Sebastian Shaw.
Yeah, he was excellent. And like I said, Matthew Vaughn was awesome, and I completely see why you put that as so high as you did. My number three, and I'm glad to say this because you guys haven't said it yet, is The Dark Knight.
You've changed things. Forever. And why do you want to kill me?
I don't want to kill you. What would I do without you? Go back to ripping off mob dealers? No, no. No. No, you. You complete me.
Like Michael Keaton's Batman and Chris Evans' Captain America, I was totally against Heath Ledger being cast as the Joker. The only thing I really knew him from was Brokeback Mountain and what was that Mel Gibson movie?
Patriot.
And The Patriot? But he and Nolan reinvented the character. He now was just this psychotic killer that, like I mentioned before, with Batman 89, I mean, he made himself into this killer that just painted himself to look like a clown instead of actually, you know, being physically altered by some chemicals. He was legitimately scary. I mean, he was kind of like, I think he tried to have him be portrayed as like the characters from A Clockwork Orange. And I thought he just did an awesome job, and he deserved that Oscar more than most people deserve their own Oscars. And now when I think of the Joker, I can't help but think of him now. And I think that that's an amazing attribute. And if you can take a character and you can convince me that this is what the character should be, you did something special. And I really appreciated his performance in it. I also thought Christian Bale was great as Batman, and this was his second outing. And we got to see more of Batman this time because we didn't have to go through his whole origin story. What most of my friends who are not comic book friends would say is that what they liked about the movie is that they felt that this was a good movie. And if you took away Batman and the Joker, this was still a good movie that they would watch. I mean, you could put in Robert De Niro and Al Pacino and it could be heat all over again. But it's something that they would go see. And they didn't need to see Batman and Joker in this movie to enjoy it. And that's when a movie succeeds, when you're able to go past comic book fans and you're able to get moviegoers to appreciate the movie. And that's what The Dark Knight did for a lot of people, and it did it for me too.
Yeah, this is my number one, and for a lot of those reasons. It's a crime drama that happens to have Batman. I'm going to disagree. I think the modern Joker, since, you know, post-Killing Joke, is kind of very Ledger. I mean, yes, he's deformed, but he is that sadistic, and it's the closest we're ever going to get to some of the way he's written, where he gets off on killing people for no reason whatsoever. That's what's funny to him. It's just that thing, and I think Ledger had that. Bale, the overdubbing of his voice with the thing was probably the only flaw I'll even see in this movie at all. The art direction, the story, the acting. I mean, they even got rid of Katie Holmes and brought in a better actress with Maggie Gyllenhaal to play Rachel. I think the Two-Face stuff is a little rushed, I'll say that too. Because he could have been a great character coming into... And I wonder how much of Ledger's death changed what Dark Knight Rises was supposed to be. These characters could have both come back and had separate roles in that, and... It, to me, it's the number one superhero film because it's not really a superhero film. It's up there with Goodfellas to me. It's that kind of level of crime drama. And as you said, you know, it's a Pacino De Niro feel to it.
I don't have much else to say. I understand your guys' love for it. I think it's been a little bit blown out of proportion as we continue to move away from it. I think that a lot of Ledger's death led to some overvaluation of it. I actually like Aaron Eckhart's performance, and I think it's highly underrated. I think he did a tremendous job as Two-Face, and I think he did a tremendous job as Harvey Dent leading up to Two-Face. It's a very good movie. It's not one of my favorites, but I'm not going to cast any aspersions against you guys.
And that's my number three, The Dark Knight. With that, let's get into number two. And Ron, what's your number two?
My number two is Captain America Winter Soldier. And not to repeat, but it just, my top two between this and Dark Knight are there because they transcend the genre and can stand on their own without someone in a costume in it.
Yeah, and my number two is also Winter Soldier. And I agree, and I think we stated before why we both think this is such a fantastic film.
Yeah, and that's my number six. We basically went over everything we had to say about Captain America Winter Soldier. So my number two is The Avengers. We already discussed this. We said how awesome this movie was. And there's not much to say about it other than that is my number two. So let's get right into number one. Ron, what's your number one?
The best Batman film of all time? Batman and Robin. No, we just said it, Dark Knight. It's just not a superhero film, which makes it better.
Yeah, we already discussed The Dark Knight. That was my number three, and that was nowhere on Patrick's list at all. Let's get right into Patrick's number one.
My number one, we discussed it earlier, and it's Guardians of the Galaxy, and I foresee this being number one for a long time to come.
So much fun. I think its lack of seriousness is why it stayed at that five level for me. The plot, you know, with Ronan, it didn't feel as heavy as it should have, but I didn't care. You just had fun watching the movie.
Yeah, and like Ron, Guardians was my number five, and I agree with what both of you said, and as I'd mentioned before, it probably should have been a little higher. I'll probably watch it this weekend and probably will be a little higher.
But watch Sky High first.
Yeah, well, I have that on Blu-ray and DVD too. All right, so let's get to my number one. And my number one, we already discussed too, and that was Superman the movie. We're not going to go into this again, but it's my favorite superhero movie of all time. And I never get tired of watching it. I watch it every year, and I'm looking forward to watching it the next time I see it. All right, so with that, let's all recap what our top 10 is. Now, Ron, could you go over again exactly what your top 10 is?
Sure. Number 10 was Big Hero 6, 9, Amazing Spider-Man, 8, X-Men 2, X-Men United, number 7, Superman, number 6 is Batman 89, number 5, Guardians of the Galaxy, 4, Batman Begins, 3, Marvel's The Avengers, 2, Captain America the Winter Soldier, and number one, The Dark Knight.
And Patrick, can you give us your top 10?
Tied for number 10 was Blade 3 and Sky High. Number 9 is Thor. Number 8 is Spider-Man, the Tobey Maguire version. Number 7 is Iron Man 3. Number 7 is Iron Man. Number 6 is X-Men 2. Number 5 is Captain America the First Avenger. Number 4, also Tobey Maguire, Spider-Man 2. Number 3, X-Men First Class. Number 2, Captain America the Winter Soldier. And finally, the best comic book movie ever, Guardians of the Galaxy.
And here's my top 10. My number 10 is X2, X-Men United. 9 is Spider-Man 2. Number 8 is Watchmen. Number 7 is Kick-Ass. Number 6 is Captain America Winter Soldier. Number 5 is Guardians of the Galaxy. Number 4 is Tim Burton's Batman. Number 3 is The Dark Knight. Number 2 is The Avengers. And my number 1 movie is Superman the movie. So with that, that's the end of our topic of the week. And that was our top 10 superhero movies of all time. All right, now is the part of the show where we go into listener email. And we have a couple of emails that we're going to read. Our first email comes from Mark Evans, and Mark would like to know, what did we think about the Star Wars Rebels season finale?
I was very, very happy and very, very surprised they went to bringing Ahsoka in so quickly into this series, but I really think it ties it back into that universe we know a little bit better. And it's going to give us more of a definitive time period. I mean, we know that Ezra was born on the day Order 66 was given, from what they said.
Yep.
So we know it's about 3 years before New Hope. So he's going to be the exact same age as the twins. But I think, you know, having someone we know to start establishing what's happened in those 15 years a little bit better is going to be key to that series. Even it's only supposed to be, a three-season run before they go to something else?
I do believe two or three seasons, yeah.
Yeah. I'm surprised the season ended so quickly. I thought it was going to be at least, a 22. But it ended great on a high note. A lot of surprises, not just with, the return of characters, but such a pretty definitive death for their main villain.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was awesome, not for the fact that I've just loved the show, and I realize, how do you pronounce it, Ahsoka?
I think so.
And how important she is to the series, but because it lent a ton of legitimacy towards the series, towards the fact that it's in canon, and I think it means a lot that people now who are fans need to take this show seriously, because I don't know if the hardcore Star Wars fans really were watching some show on Disney XD. But first of all, it's a fantastic show. Second of all, the voice work in it has been tremendous. And third of all, now you have to pay attention because it's important, it means a lot, and it's in canon.
I have to agree with both of you. I really enjoyed the series, and it really surprised me because I was not a fan of the Clone Wars. I think that the Clone Wars carried over a lot of the problems that the prequels had, and we can save that for another podcast. But for now, getting back to Star Wars Rebels, the thing I liked most about them is that all the characters seemed to gel well, and they're interesting stories, and I really felt that for the first time, we had something that felt like the original trilogy, or it felt like classic Star Wars. It was really nice to see the old Star Destroyers and the TIE Fighters make an appearance, and just hearing their sound kind of harking back to what I was so used to. What I enjoyed a lot about this last episode is that there was a lot of shocking things that occurred. The number one shocker was the Inquisitor, who is the main villain in this first season. Instead of surrendering, he just basically killed himself off. That's something I never expected to see, especially on Disney XD. I like the seriousness of it. And yes, it is a kid's show, but it does have some adult themes to it. The other thing is at the very end, Darth Vader shows up, and you know he's going to be the villain for next season. And it just opens up like a whole realm of possible storylines, like Ahsoka now being revealed. At some point, she's probably going to confront Vader, and that can be a very interesting story that I know I'm definitely going to look forward to. But yeah, I was impressed with this series. I can't wait for season two, and it definitely looks like it's got a lot of potential.
Yeah, it definitely opens up a lot of doors.
Okay, so that's it with Star Wars Rebels. Let's move on to the next question, and it's from Stephen Fonte. Steve would like to know, why do you think Warner DC appears to be in such a reactive state to Marvel in terms of superhero movies? With so many more resources at their disposal, why do they seem so afraid to commit to their characters and take the lead in the industry?
You know, I've always been more of a DC reader than a Marvel reader, and it's always bugged me. I mean, DC has done television really well, as we said. I mean, even back the Diniverse of animated series that have spanned, you know, Batman the Animated Series through and beyond Justice League were all incredibly good shows. Their animated movies have pretty much been universally good. I don't think they have a handle on continuing, you know, a story in a movie and what they want to do with that. I think they, as I said earlier when we were talking about Green Lantern, I think they had where they wanted to go, but they couldn't get there because they worried so far about the long game that they lost the short game in the middle of it. I mean, they need someone like Nolan to have that vision, and, you know, they thought they had him continuing as an executive producer, but that feel for Batman has... The Bat books are so different than all the other DC universe. I mean, even Batman, when he appears in other books, like in the Justice League, isn't the same character. He's, you know, at the core, he's the same, but he's not the loner. He has his equals there. So I just think they can't figure out how to keep a serious tone and find what makes their characters appealing.
I'm going to be blunt and quick with this, and you can go ahead right after me, Joe, is I think that the people running the DC branch and with Warner Brothers of the film section are idiots. I honestly think that. I think the further I got away from The Dark Knight and how excited I was for a fresh take on Batman, the worse those movies actually are, and how the political message just starts really beating you over the head with it. I think they wanted to make these prestige films versus comic book films, and there's some very good movies in there, but you can say what you want. I'll take Captain America, Winter Soldier, and Guardians over anything they're putting out. They're afraid to take risks, and I think that they're just not as smart as the people running Marvel.
The main problem with DC and Warner Brothers is they only have confidence in one of their characters, and that character is Batman. And I know that Batman in the Dark Knight series has made Warner Brothers billions of dollars, but they're afraid to do anything that's not like Batman or the Dark Knight. Even with Man of Steel, they kind of made Superman a darker character than what he's supposed to be. Superman should be light. I mean, yeah, there should be some sort of peril and some sort of adventure in it, but he doesn't have to. Clark seemed like he was miserable throughout that whole movie, and I'm still not sure at the end if he was happy or not. He's not the Dark Knight. Don't ever make Superman like the Dark Knight. Don't make any of their characters like the Dark Knight. And I feel like, although it was successful, Man of Steel, and they decided to give him a sequel, they kind of threw in a little monkey wrench in there, and they said, well, the sequel of Man of Steel is going to be Batman versus Superman. And they just didn't have enough confidence to give him his own sequel that he rightly deserved. And now they changed that title to Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice, and they're bringing in everybody. So it's not going to be the movie that I was hoping for, to see Batman versus Superman kicking the crap out of each other for 2 hours. Now they're going to bring in Aquaman, they're going to bring in Wonder Woman, they're going to bring in Cyborg, they're going to bring in Flash, and it's just going to have too many characters in it. Granted, they might just be small cameos, but I just think that I would like for the movie to focus on Batman and Superman. They've had a really great history together, especially when they're not on the same side, when they battle each other. It's some of the best comics. Just see two of the most powerful superheroes in the DC universe go at it. And that's what I wanted to see, and I'm telling you right now, that's not what we're going to get. Again, they just don't have any confidence in any other characters, so they're kind of shoehorning all these superheroes into this Batman versus Superman movie, trying to introduce them, trying to get people to get used to them. But I'm telling you right now, if the first movie that comes out after Batman v Superman is Suicide Squad, if that movie's not successful, if that movie doesn't make $1 billion, they're going to start canceling movies left and right. Because again, they're going to show that they have no confidence in any of their characters. And I think that all the announcements that they made at some shareholders meeting regarding the future of their DC characters and films was just a knee-jerk reaction to the success that Marvel was having with all of their characters. They knew that Marvel was already starting with Phase 3, and they really don't even have Phase 1. But they wanted to get a piece of that action. But again, I just wish they would take risks like Marvel has. I mean, when you look at Captain America Winter Soldier, that was directed by the Russo brothers. And before that, the only thing they really did was some TV. And that was extremely risky, but it paid off. I just think that the executives need to have more faith in their characters. And it goes back to what Patrick said. They need to start taking risks. And I'm glad that Marvel did. That's all I have to say. Okay, and with that last email, this will be the end of our first show. We want to thank you for joining us. We also hope that you really enjoyed it, and we hope that you'll come back for more next time. Until then, this is WDWNT Nerd Alert. See you next time.